Every single thing I could yank on and several I couldn't. I climbed into the other wheelbase and found nothing compelling or useful. Frustrated, I just started walking away from the plane. A few blocks down the street, I turned to look at that massive machine. I'd spent hours in the dream staring at it, so I didn't expect to see anything new. And I didn't. But I did feel my heart suddenly jump into my throat before I began running full speed back to the plane, because I'd figured it out. Back in the forward bay, I had to let my eyes adjust for a few minutes before I could see the tiny engraved shapes on the handle again. They weren't the indecipherable scribble of on the wrong track, dream writing. They were the lines and dots of the Mayan numerical system Miranda had taught me at the hotel in D.C. The same system that, I was now certain, represented the number 6 on the tail of the plane. I could absolutely have punched myself in the face and looked up the system with Andy, but I wanted nothing more than to do this on my own. After months of people all over the world co-solving sequences, I wanted to be more than the vehicle through which this final sequence was solved. I wanted my name on that goddamn Wikipedia page. So I sat there and tried my damnedest to remember what Miranda had told me. The dots were ones and the bars were fives. So 2 bars with 1 dot was an 11. I was pretty sure about that. 2 dots, that was just 2. This was simple. The Mayans knew what was up. So I had a sequence of numbers, 11, 2, 7, 19, 4, 4, 12. Now what the hell was I supposed to do with those numbers? Well, to the side of the door were 7 dials, each numbered 1 to 19. Good Lord, was it that easy? I set each of the dials to the corresponding number and actually had to dodge as the hatch fell down into the wheel bay. My foot slipped and I tumbled down out of the open hatch. My head slammed into the landing gear on the way down. I awoke in Andy's apartment. Fuck! I shouted. Andy screamed from the other room, "Are you okay?" And then ran into the room. Yes, I'm great. I just... Fuck! I got into the plane. Then I solved the next step in the sequence. It was the Mayan numbers Miranda told me about. They were printed on a hatch in the landing gear bay. I was opening the hatch and I fucking fell and hit my head and woke up. Andy laughed like a madman. Shut up! It's pretty funny, April. You bagged your first clue and finished it off by slamming your head into a wall. I slammed my head into a landing gear, thank you very much. I need to go back there. And God only knows I can't get to sleep now. I rolled over and picked up my phone, which, of course, was set to do not disturb. There was a text from Maya. Thank you so much for that video. It was really good. That was a good feeling. A calming feeling. It's okay, April, Andy said. You're the only one who can access this. There's no time constraint. I sighed. I know. I just... God damn it, you know? I was almost there. Well, you were almost to the next clue. I don't mean to harsh your buzz, but there's bound to be more. Chapter 20. It was a couple of weeks later, and I was sitting in the cockpit of the 767 pushing buttons, trying to make the plane do something. Life had slowed down for me. When everyone you know, including the President of the United States, is telling you the same thing, eventually you listen. Also, being almost murdered twice in one day and then spending weeks dealing with constant, dull, aching pain does inspire a little bit of self-reflection. Not only did I have to actually think about the danger I had placed myself in, I also found myself thinking for the first time about the fact that I could, and also would, die someday. I was trying very hard to settle into my new, more behind-the-scenes life. I was still a household name, but I was mostly staying offline at the moment. The world knew I was the only one who could work on the key, and that meant I and the whole team was super active on the SOM, but I wasn't doing interviews or press events or even making videos. I made Robin take my social media passwords away. If I wanted to tweet something, I had to send it to Robin, who would edit it and make sure it was a good idea before it got tweeted. He would post some relevant stuff on various social media to keep my profiles alive, but I was trying to read books and watch television shows and work slowly and methodically on the 767 sequence. I had a huge portion of the world helping me, and it was a lot of pressure, so that was a good distraction from my deep, aching desire to leap back into the fray. I was addicted to the attention and to the outrage, and to the rush of being involved in something so huge. But more than any of that, I was just addicted. After the attacks, things calmed down. People were somehow less freaked out because we were all more or less on the same page. People had started to feel comfortable with the Carls, as if they'd just always been there and always would be. Basically, I wasn't really needed. But addiction isn't necessarily about the specific thing. It's about mental reliance. It's a bug in your brain software. And even with the support of some truly remarkable people working to keep me in line, I never went cold turkey. Even after the apps were off my phone, I would go to Twitter.com using its browser. The 767 sequence was giving up none of its secrets. Once I got into the avionics bay, getting into the plane wasn't another sequence, it was just opening a hatch. But the interior of the plane had turned out to be massive and completely normal. Going back and forth between the dream and the SOM had provided a wealth of data on the plane. What year it was made, what model it was, did you know planes had models? And even a fair guess at which precise plane it was modeled from. I had spent hours on the in-flight entertainment system, become quite familiar with the cockpit using a flight simulator, and interviewed pilots, mechanics, and flight attendants who worked on 767s. All to no avail. Anyway, that's what I was doing when Robin shook me awake. This was pretty not normal for Robin. He seemed visibly flustered in his pressed maroon dress shirt sitting on the edge of my bed in Andy's spare room. Andy and Miranda were standing behind him. This was pretty dang weird. April, I have some important and bad news. Gathering my wits, I said, That sounds bad. And also important. His lips made a thin line. That wasn't good. The defenders have solved the 767 sequence. That's not possible, I said, feeling relieved. I'm the only one with access to it. Apparently, access isn't necessary. Miranda? Miranda began. I hadn't been paying enough attention to the code. It's complete, it turns out. If you compile it, it's a complete program. It does, however, ask for a key. Isn't the whole code just keys? I asked. In a manner of speaking, yes. We could tell that the code was useless until we had it all, so every piece was as important as every other piece. But now it seems like we do have it all, and it's asking for a password of sorts. We think that password is what you're working toward in the 767 sequence. But if that's true, then how could the defenders have it? Robin took over again. We don't know. We just know that they've solved the sequence and are taking action based on that information right now. We don't know what they're doing, but we know they're doing it. Did they release a statement? They might just be baiting us into freaking out. I was pretty much fully out of my sleep haze now, but I still couldn't really believe the conversation we were having. No, I heard it directly from Peter Petrowicki. He looked almost sick as he said it. Why would he tell you that? He didn't. Suddenly no one was making eye contact with me. He told his agent. His agent is at your agency? His agent is Jennifer Putnam. A lot of things happened in my mind simultaneously, none of them good. I said very slowly to Robin, who was doing his best to meet my eyes, Jennifer Putnam is my agent. She is also Mr. Petrowicki's agent. Continue, I said, my voice sounding unfamiliar to my own ears. I didn't even realize how angry I was until I heard it. She took him on shortly after you, he said. She was aware of the significance of the Carls before anyone else in the industry and felt that she had an obligation to scoop up related clients. I had a fight with her about it. I told her that his perspective was nasty and dangerous. She told me we weren't in the business of deciding who was right and wrong and threatened to fire me and legally prevent me from working with you. How long have you known about this? I almost shouted. He could have explained. I could see he wanted to, but I hadn't asked him to explain, so he just said, months. Months, I repeated. So, the whole time Putnam was trying to get me to do an in-person with Petrowicki? Those months? An interview that was always going to have a better outcome for a professional debater than a 23-year-old graphic designer? But what does that matter, because either way the money was going into Putnam's pocket? I was silent for long enough that Robin's mouth opened to speak, but I cut him off quietly now. The months during which Mr. Petrowicki was dog-whistling his support of extremists who would go on to murder hundreds of people and try to murder me? But hey, gotta look out for the agency. so let's just keep our heads down and serve our clients. Those months? April, I'm so sorry. Once I started not telling you, get out! I screamed. I was surprised to find that I wasn't crying. I felt like I should be crying, but there wasn't anything but anger there. Robin's mouth pressed closed and his face contracted. It looked like he might cry, but he just stood up from the bed. If you need me, I interrupted coldly. I'm sorry, I'm not being clear. You are fired. In the silence that followed, Robin turned and walked out of the room. I wanted to do nothing more than curl up and go back to the dream. Back to my dream that Carl had made just for me. But Peter Petrowicki had solved the sequence, and he had done it without the dream, which meant that I could too. That was pretty uncool, April, Andy said. What? Robin has never done anything except help you. He's been there all day every day for the last 6 months, and he's never even asked for a thank you, and I'm not sure he's gotten one either. Never done anything except help me? Peter Petrowicki created a movement that tried to kill me, a movement that succeeded in destabilizing the whole planet, Andy. God, we don't have time for this. They've solved the sequence. We need to figure this out. Andy sighed. Then he turned around and started walking out. Where are you going? I asked, more accusatorial than I intended. I don't know, April. He turned back to me. I'm going to leave. I don't know if I'll be excited to see you here when I get back. Well, then I won't be here, I retorted. He looked at Miranda, and then he looked at me. Have fun, you two. The look on his face was something I didn't think Andy Scamped would be capable of. It was corrosive, disgusted, and also very tired. He walked out the door. I want to tell you that I understood this then, but I didn't. I didn't get it, that we had spent weeks on the road on that book tour, the three of us, and that Andy had suddenly stopped seeming like he was that into me. And that we were all working so much, so maybe I didn't notice when Andy and Miranda had been spending more and more time together. That he was funny and smart, and so was she, and that Andy was afraid to make a move, probably because he had spent years perfectly aware that if he had made a move on me, our friendship would have been over. And then I got lonely and bored one night and fucked it all up for him. But no, I had no idea. Miranda came over, her sympathy outweighing her discomfort, and sat on the edge of the bed. It's just a very high-stress time. It's more than that, I replied. She leaned over to wrap her arms around me, which of course made me feel horribly trapped. I need to call Maya, I said stiffly. Miranda sighed. I understand, she said. What? Nothing, she said, looking tiny. She was older than me, taller than me, smarter than me, and terrified of me. Just about the sequence, she's our expert. We can't just let the defenders win this. Okay, April. I knew she didn't believe me, and looking back, she was absolutely right. I didn't want to hug Miranda. I didn't want to have a girlfriend. I didn't need another thing to worry about. I did need to talk to Maya. But she was also a convenient wrench to throw into this relationship because throwing wrenches into relationships is what I did. I got out of the bed. I had started thinking of it as my bed, but that feeling had suddenly evaporated. Miranda, can you stay here and work on making sure you have the program ready to run if I can get the password? It's ready to run now. And then she added, I think, in a manner that was most unlike her. I was used to her being ridiculously sure of everything. Well, I need it ready to go the moment I have the key. Is there a way to email me a file or website I can input it into if I don't have you at hand? So yes, I was offhandedly asking this beautiful genius, who wanted nothing more than to be a part of this, to compile a bunch of code for me that would make her unnecessary to me. Did she know that? Oh, absolutely. Did she do it anyway? Of course she did. Yeah, I can work on that. I need to go for a walk, I said, leaving alone implied, and left Miranda there without another word. I exited Andy's building on 26th and just started walking. I called Maya immediately and explained the situation. I realized I was pissed at her too, because the defenders wouldn't have been able to figure any of this out if I had just kept the 767 sequence a secret like I initially wanted to. It was a dumb anger, and also not a helpful one. I tried not to throw that in her face because I needed her. How could the password be outside of the dream? I asked. We don't know that it is. The sequence may lead you to another part of the dream that is public. Clues have been skipped by brute force before, she replied. Why did it have to be a defender? I asked in frustration, knowing that the question wasn't helpful. They're like maybe 2% of the humans in the world. How did they figure it out before the rest of us? That's actually a really good point, April, Maya said. It is? Yeah, I mean, it could just be a coincidence, but it could also be one of two other things. One, they knew that the information would be passed along, and they're just fucking with us. Or two, it's something different about the way they think. About the way they see the Carls that helped them uncover the password. Oh, so it helps to be a xenophobic, delusional conspiracy theorist? Maybe, yeah. I had just arrived in a park I didn't recognize. People lounged on grassy green hillocks. There were basketball courts and old guys playing chess. Very NYC. Maya continued, What do the defenders obsess about that you don't? Me? That I'm a secret space alien? They want me to do a DNA test. They don't think my parents exist. Either that or I'm a traitor to my species, or that the Carls have been using me all along and that I was chosen specially and duped into being their shill. There are reams of conspiracy theories, Maya. I don't read them because it freaks me out. They think that you were chosen by the Carls and you don't? Right. It's ridiculous to think that they picked me out of 8 billion humans on the planet, like I was the only person lovable and gullible enough to be their missionary. April, really? Really what? She didn't reply, sensing we were on treacherous ground, so I just continued talking. Okay, yes, Carl saved me. He didn't save anyone else, I said, conveniently leaving out that I had also been saved from an assassin's bullet by Hollywood Carl's right hand. They gave me a dream that no one else had access to. I get it. I couldn't finish that sentence. Yes, you are. God, that gives me the fucking creeps! The defenders were spouting that from day one, and I hate that it's true. You hate that you were chosen by an alien race to be their envoy? That they think you're special enough to give unique knowledge to, and to keep from being currently dead? She said this somewhat mockingly, like of course I loved being special. Yes, okay, I hate it! I was suddenly angry. We had made it to the treacherous ground, and now we had to deal with it. I hate it now, and I hated it the first moment I thought it. I hate that they saved me, and let all those other people die. I hate that the weight of this bullshit situation is all on me. My volume level had increased, but it was Manhattan. People screamed into their phones all the time. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry I didn't think of that. She paused. But it's not just you. You've got help. You've got good friends. Good people. I love Andy, of course, and Miranda and Robin seem lovely. There was no way I was going to get into the weeds of my day thus far, so I just said, I don't know that I do, Maya. Oh, April, she sighed. Yeah, I sure do know how to fuck shit up. Yeah, you do, she agreed. Those words should have been extra weight on me, but for some reason they made me lighter. The silence hung for a while. For that one moment, I forgot that I was at the center of a swirling storm of political intrigue, and I was just a shitty ex-girlfriend. It was kind of lovely. I laughed. Okay. I headed back to the topic at hand. So the Carls really did choose me, and they really are treating me different than everyone in the rest of the world. How could that help the defenders solve the 767 sequence? I don't know, April, she said, a little dejected. I didn't know why. Possibly because we had gotten close to talking about something else, and again, I didn't let it happen. I think the Carls, maybe they didn't pick you because of who you were, but because of who you could become. That's a nice thing to say, though I don't know that I love who I've become. Maybe you're not done yet. I didn't respond to that. April, I've never stopped being obsessed with And then she paused. I waited patiently, silently, for her to finish that sentence. But then I couldn't, because I had solved the 767 sequence. "Obsessed with me," I said. "No, that's not what I mean. I mean, I thought I could detach from this whole weirdness, but after you left, I just threw myself in. I lied when I said I just liked the dream. I needed to keep being a part of it. I thought I was better than you, but I was exactly as obsessed, just in a different way." I let her finish because it was important, but it was also agonizing. "Okay, but that is also not what I meant. I meant the defenders are obsessed with me. They have 1,000 conspiracy theories, Maya. They know everything about me. Every move I've ever made, every poster in the background of every video, everything public I've ever done in my life." "And?" "Row 6, I said. "I sat in it that first week when I was flying out to meet Jennifer Putnam and do that late night show. I got upgraded because someone was in the seat I'd been assigned, but they'd been assigned it too. It was my first time in business class. It was a 767. It was row 6. 6, like the Mayan number on the tail of the 767? "Yeah, and my little TV was broken. Or I thought it was broken. It had a bunch of weird code on it." "Weird code, like..." "Weird like hex code." "But how would the defenders get their hands on that? How would we?" "Because I fucking tweeted it, Maya. God damn it." Chapter 21. There were people looking at me, which wasn't great because I was pretty recognizable. I moved as fast as I could with my back and shoulders still stiff and twinging, back toward Andy's place, but then instead popped into a coffee shop on 12th. It was a cute place with a couple of bars and a few two-tops. About a half dozen student-looking people were drinking their lattes in front of their laptops. "Hello, my name is April May, and I need a laptop computer right now," I said. I had bet correctly, and there was indeed one person, a guy in his late teens or early 20s, who was not just willing but honored to give me his computer. In a moment, I had my tweet up, at April May Be Not, on my way to LA and got bumped to business class. My little plane TV is broken, though, so I want the money I didn't spend back. That was a simpler time. The little plane TV, indeed, showed code that I now instantly recognized as hexadecimal. Was that the passkey? It was a lot of characters. So I popped it into its own window and started typing it out. As soon as I was done, about 5 minutes later, I emailed it to Miranda and Maya, which hopefully wasn't going to cause any drama. "The key?" question mark. "I think this is the key, though I don't know what it is or what to do with it." Then I texted them both separately. "Check your email." Maya wrote back first. "It's hex. I've converted it. Would you like to guess what it is?" Me. "The lyrics to a song?" Maya. "Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings, angel." Me. "Of course it's Bowie." Maya. "Hell yes." Miranda replied back with the same information, except to say that she had also inputted it into the latest version of the full code compiled on the SOM. "I'm sending you the result right now. It's not complicated, but April, let's talk about this." It wasn't complicated. It was an address in New Jersey, and 5 words. Only April. No one else. Until that moment, I had fully made up my mind to call the president as soon as we were sure we'd cracked it. It wasn't even a question in my mind. We had the procedure down, and I was going to do what I'd been told. I was tired of making big decisions, and I was especially tired of screwing everything up when I made them. But now I was being told to do something else. And while I'd made up my mind what to do, it hadn't stopped me from fantasizing about what might be waiting for me at the end of this road. My secret heart said that it was a face-to-face meeting with the intelligence behind the Carls, rather the entity that I had come to think of as Carl in my head. The thought of that meeting happening between Carl and Peter Petrowicki made me want to vom. That's not actually accurate. It made me angrier than any other thought I had ever had. I was being asked to do one thing by the president, who had been honest with me, who had trusted me, who was the absolute personification of authority. And then there was Carl. Carl, who changed my life, who saved my life, who let everyone die except me. Carl, the mystery. My mystery. my identity. I logged out of all my accounts and thanked the guy for his computer. He wanted a photo. We took one. I told everyone else who had gathered to watch that I was in a bit of a rush, but thanks for watching my videos. Less than half an hour had elapsed. Miranda wrote again. Are you going? If you're going, just let us know. But I didn't think I'd been given a choice. Or maybe I didn't want to think I'd been given a choice. I finally felt fully comfortable with what I'd become. Did I know the Carls were good? No. I thought they were. I hoped they were. I felt they were. But I didn't know. What I did know is that I'd chosen my side. And my side had chosen me. My phone rang. It was Maya. I didn't pick up. Then it buzzed with a text. I plugged in the key. I saw what it said. You can't go on your own. I didn't respond, but she didn't stop. April, maybe you can go on your own, but don't do it right now. Let's take some time. But the defenders were already on their way. Who knows what mess they would cause? She didn't give up. April, just call me. Talk to me. The phone rang again. I put it on mute. I was doing the thing I had to do. There wasn't any point. But I did keep my eye on the three little dots that told me Maya was writing something to me. It finally came through as a wall of text. You're so caught up in this you have no idea. To Miranda and Robin, you're so much more than a person. They've never known an April May that wasn't famous. Have either of them ever said no to anything you've ever told them to do? Listen to me. April, in those relationships, you have all the power. Too much power. I've watched you with them. They idolize you. That's how fame works. It sucks. No one you meet from now on is ever again going to feel normal around you. Both of them feel like it's a privilege just to be near you. This is just something that happens, not something you did on purpose. But when they let you do these, frankly, dangerous things, that doesn't mean that they're agreeing it's a good idea. They just can't say no to you. April, I hear you, but please trust me. Do not do this. I am telling you not to do this because I love you. I read the whole thing through 4 or 5 times. Maya had never said, I love you to me. She knew it would scare me off. Not responding felt like it would be one of the greatest betrayals I could commit. I didn't respond. Chapter 22.
Are you sure this is it?
The driver asked. I didn't need to check my phone because I'd been studying this very spot on Google Street View on and off for the last 30 minutes. I'd even found a real estate listing. It's a warehouse. It's not currently occupied. It's for lease. If you would like to lease it, that would run you around $15,000 per month. It was, it turned out, a pretty big warehouse.
Yep, thank you.
I didn't know whether to be relieved or worried that there was no sign of Peter Petrowicki and whatever camera crew would be following him around. Speaking of cameras, I didn't have one. What I did have was 2 phones and my ever-present, just-in-case, external battery. I thought for a long time about what Carl wanted. The message said, only April. But that seemed clearly about people's physical presence. Carl usually seemed to want me to bring an audience with me wherever I went. And feeling certain that whatever was about to happen would be historic, I made a call that was both deeply foolish and genius. I went full live stream. Facebook's system had gotten so good that it could handle pretty much infinite viewership these days. Worst case scenario, I figured I would crash it. Best case scenario, I'd beat the record for the most viewed stream of all time and share one of humanity's greatest moments with the largest live audience in history. This is April May. And I'm pleased to announce that I have solved the 767 sequence. For those of you who haven't been following, for a while now we've known that all of the dream sequences have been solved, and that the world is awaiting the solution of one final sequence that only appeared in one dream. While saying all that, I walked from the curb up to a chain fence gate. I don't know why I was the only one who had this dream, just as I don't know why New York Carl saved me from Martin Bellecourt on July 13th. I carefully kept the camera pointed at myself to minimize the clues of my location. The warehouse was big, 3 stories, made of wood, with large, mostly boarded-over windows and a few huge loading bay doors. Wood lay strewn around the base of one of the walls. In between me and the door were both the fence and a parking lot that was being reclaimed by persistent little grasses. After solving the 767 sequence, we were given a password, which, when inputted into the code generated from the rest of the dream sequences, directed me here. The Garden State. The message was very specific that I should come alone, so that is what I've done. I was poking at the fence now. It was capped with barbed wire, and the chain at the gate was tight and secure. I began walking along it, thinking aloud to what was now a massive audience about how I was going to get in. But then after I turned the corner, I spotted a cut in the fence. At this point, I decided to tell some truth. Not all of it or anything, but some. However, we received word not long ago that another group had decoded the sequence, and that they were on their way here as well. This is why I have, I'll be honest, rushed into this trip a bit. I promised some people that I wouldn't do it, like this, but as we can see here, there were still bits of chain-link fence scattered around in the overgrown grass. I am not the first here. I crawled through the slit in the fence and started walking up to the building. Along the way, my voice got quieter. I knew some of the defenders must be nearby, possibly already taking part in whatever weirdness Carl had in store. I had thought a lot about what the endgame was, and I'll be honest, my dream was that it was some grand prize. Not like a new car or $1 million, but some gift only the Carls could bestow. Immortality. My own spaceship. World peace. And there was a feeling inside of me that if I didn't get there, some ignorant, awful exophobe would be taking an all-expenses-paid trip to the Carl homeworld to show off how utterly awful humans are. I didn't say any of this out loud, mostly because I knew it was a pipe dream to think anyone could ever guess what the Carls were up to, but also because I had made a pledge to myself to completely ignore that the Defenders even existed when speaking publicly. Instead, I talked in low tones about how we solved the 767 sequence, and all the people who had helped. The accordion players, all the people who knew Mayan numerals, the engineers who had taught me about the inner workings of a modern 767, and of course Maya, whom I had decided to give credit to for helping me uncover the final clue. It was she who had told me to get into the mind of the defenders, after all. As I got closer to the warehouse, I noticed a human-sized door to the side of one of the giant loading bay doors. It was hanging loosely. One of its hinges had been pulled out of the doorframe, and a pile of clothes lay in front of it. That seemed like the simplest point of entrance, but also the most dangerous. Still, I felt time pressing on me, so I approached it. The clothes in front of the door looked dirty and wet. I was terrified. My heart was fluttering, and I suddenly had to pee. Sneaking into an abandoned building is scary whether or not you're alone and have been previously hunted. I believed, and still believe, that most of the defenders wouldn't hurt me physically. But I had seen already that most was not all. Then again, I had already started the live stream and the numbers were ticking up. And then I smelled grape jelly. It was in the clothes, seeping around the entrance to the warehouse. Who had it been? Peter Petrowicki? Oh, God, I said, unable to control myself. I pointed the camera away as fast as I could. I think, I said, and then paused to calm myself. I think someone tried to go inside, but Carl didn't want them to. I think they died. I couldn't bring myself to say more than that. I didn't even want to think about it. So I was silent as I stared at the doorway, doing my best not to look down at the mess at my feet. Carl had zapped them the moment they tried to walk inside. And now it was my turn. But Carl had told me to come here, and trusting Carl was who I was now. I did my best to tiptoe around the mess and into the warehouse. It took my eyes a solid moment to adjust to the darkness of the warehouse. The room I had entered was massive and empty. Dust floated inside the slices of light that fell through the few windows that hadn't been boarded up. Papers and leaves littered the concrete floor. A few bits and bolts of metal shot through that floor that I assumed were used for whatever manufacturing had once been done there. Well, It appears to be a giant, empty warehouse, I said quietly to the live stream, feeling a bit let down. The entire lower level of the building was one open space, and there was nothing in it. There was, however, a metal slatted staircase that led up to a second level that appeared to house some offices with windows that overlooked the warehouse floor. I'm going to go up these stairs to check out the offices. The stairs clanged as I walked up them. I kept a tight grip on the railing with my left hand while broadcasting my progress with my right. The connection had remained solid. I was broadcasting in HD to the whole world. My personal phone, the one I wasn't using to live stream, buzzed in my pocket. I dug it out as fast as I could and saw that it was Miranda. Wasn't she watching? Didn't she know I couldn't take a call right now? I was contemplating answering the phone when I heard it, playing off in the distance. Do you hear that? I asked the live stream. I'll stick with you, baby, for 1,000 years. Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years. It was the first sign of anything unusual inside the warehouse, and boy, did it seem like a solid clue. I stopped paying attention to anything. That's the song. It's Golden Years, I said to the stream, and I started walking faster. By now, my audience was a couple million people strong. I half expected the stream to die, whether from supernatural intervention by Carl or the sheer load on the world's servers, but apparently it held. The music kept getting louder. A text notification popped up from Miranda. April, get out now! I saw the notification fly up over my screen, but my brain refused to accept it. What was she getting at? I looked up, and I was already there anyway. A little office to the side of the catwalk. There was a desk, and from it came Bowie's voice. I waited for the magic to happen, for my reward. And then another text appeared. Run. And still, I stood there. Don't cry, my sweet. Don't break my heart. Doing all right, but you gotta get smart. As I stared dumbly, another text arrived. It was faked. It's not real. It's the wrong place. I turned just in time to see the huge metal door behind me slam shut. There's my baby. Lost, that's all. Once, I'm begging you, save her little soul. You know I'm a damn fool. Chapter 23. This chapter is going to contain some graphic violence. I will tell you when it's coming. I will not be offended if you skip it. I immediately shot myself at the door, but it didn't budge. I slammed on it, shouting, "What the hell?" There was no response. Faintly over the sound of golden years, I heard footsteps racing off down the catwalk. I didn't understand how any of this was possible until I saw, on the floor next to a filing cabinet, 6 large empty plastic jugs of Welch's grape jelly. That achieved what I assumed was the desired effect, making me feel like a damned idiot. Well, I said to the live stream, panting with fear. Things have taken a turn for the worse. I have been informed that this was a hoax, and not real, and now I have been locked in a warehouse in New Jersey, and Miranda, as I'm sure you are watching, please call the police and send them to me because I am stuck in here. Also, if they could arrest the dickholes that just kidnapped me, that would be grand. I searched around the room for a bit and came up with nothing that could maybe be used as a pry bar. I slammed the door with a desk chair a couple of times, then with one of the metal drawers from the desk, but that barely even dented the door. Eventually, I got tired of hearing golden years, so I tried to turn off the little music player that it was tinnily streaming out of. No matter what buttons I hit, it did not turn off. In every town around the world, each of us must be touched with gold. Don't cry, my sweet. Don't break my heart. I'll come running, but you gotta get smart, David sang. I left the live stream going as I did all this, occasionally commenting to it because at that point, I felt pretty safe. I'd gotten word out to the world at large, and though I was pretty scared and extremely disappointed not to be meeting Carl or whatever, I hadn't smelled the smoke yet. Another text came in from Miranda. I'm so sorry. Oh God, April, it's my fault.
The code had been tampered with. It was sitting on the SOM in an open page. Anyone could edit it, and I just didn't notice that someone had. I texted her back, still streaming as I did it. It's okay. I'm fine. If I wasn't such an impulsive ass, we would have figured that out. I made you rush. I put the chair back behind the desk and set up my phone so it could see me from a not-terrible angle. Well, I know most of you have already checked out, and I'm terribly sorry for wasting all of your time today. Hopefully, if it's all right with you, we can hang out until the cops bust me out of this creepy room, because let's be honest with ourselves. You're my best friend. Oh, not any one of you, and certainly not the ones I actually know and love. Not the ones who have tried to be my friends. Not my brother, not my mom. Not any of the guys or girls I've led on, lied to, cheated on. You. You massive humans who I know nothing about. You are my best friend. And you know why? Because you like me. And no single person's love can compete with even casual regard from 100 million. That impossible inhuman wave of support. Not inhuman because you aren't humans. Inhuman because no human is designed to process it. To understand it. Fame is a drug. And as I sit here in this gross little, smoky-smelling room, trapped by some unknown prankster, I know that earlier today I was really mean. I was a bad person, and I hurt a lot of the people who I care most about in this world because I am addicted to attention. I do things that are bad for myself and my friends and my health and my world so I can get more power because I think I need that power to do good things. But then I just do stupid things instead. And I'm streaming live so I can't edit this or take any of it back. So thanks for listening. I really pretty much hate myself right now. Thank you for being my friend. Everyone in the live stream chat, which had now dwindled enough that I could actually read some of what was being said before it flew by, seemed receptive to my monologue. I tended to keep one eye on the chat anytime I was streaming. And while you can't always read every word, you can get an idea of what people are saying. And if there's something they want you to see, people will copy and paste it over and over to get your attention. In among the well wishes and kind thoughts, I saw a word I didn't expect popping up over and over. Lyrics. I scrolled up the chat to see what that was about. Ginny Dye. What were the lyrics again? Touched with gold? I know that song. It's definitely not in there. Then a few threads of support. Then, Roger Ogden.
I just re-listened like 12 times. It sounds like in every town around the world, Jesus must be touched with gold. But WTF, it's super hard to hear over April talking though.
So some people in the chat are saying that the words to golden years have changed? I'm going to stop talking so that you all can just listen. We had proved over and over again that thousands of people solving a puzzle are a lot better than one. But good Lord, was shutting up for 5 minutes hard. My personal phone rang. It was Robin. I didn't want to answer because it would interfere with everyone listening. I just kept scrolling through the chat. They were transcribing the lyrics, which made it more or less impossible to read anything in real time. But then I saw this. Lane Harris.
Guys, the lyrics changes happen on Spotify's copy too. Everyone can hear them.
Everyone, apparently it isn't just this version of the song. It's the same on Spotify. Go listen there. I'm getting a phone call.
April, thank God. I'm headed to where you are. Miranda already called the cops to help get you out. Can you get out of that room?
What? Not as far as I can tell. I tried to bust down the door.
I don't like you being stuck in there. On the stream, you said it smelled smoky?
Yeah. And I had thought maybe it smelled like old cigarettes. But now that Robin had said it, it smelled like wood smoke. Also, now that I was thinking about it, it seemed like the smell was getting stronger. But that was probably just natural anxiety at the thought of burning alive in an abandoned warehouse, right?
Robin, I am now suddenly worried, I replied. Does it still smell like smoke?
Yes, it maybe smells more like smoke.
April, hang up and figure out a way out of that room. I'm going to call the fire department, he said in a demanding staccato.
I hung up and looked around the room. There was a metal filing cabinet, on which was a terracotta pot that maybe once held some sort of life. The desk, which I could definitely not lift, the drawer I had pulled out of the desk, which now sat in the corner of the room, the desk chair, the little iPod thing, a bunch of empty jars of jelly.
None of this looked particularly helpful. Whoever had decorated this place had skipped the traditional wall-mounted crowbar. I looked out the window. It seemed maybe a little foggier out there. Or, I suppose, smokier. In traditional April-May fashion, I decided to turn my critical thinking skills over to the audience. I said, picking up the live stream. I am a little worried that I am trapped in a burning building? I laughed. It's actually not funny. I don't know why I just laughed. It's getting smokier. Fuck. Fuck. I was saved from outright panic by Robin calling on my other phone again. Fuck, Robin, fuck! He answered immediately. April, is there any way you can get out of that room? That scared the shit out of me. I don't think so. Try. Try very hard. I just got here. The fire department is on its way. They'll be here soon, but the building is on fire. How on fire? Very. The police have been trying to get in, but so far they haven't been able to. There's a window in here. It's maybe a 20-foot drop to the concrete floor below. That's all I've got. Let me get you on with a policeman. As I heard the rustle of the wind as he ran, I thought about how clean and efficient we were being about this whole thing. It was like we were scheduling a TV interview. Hey, I have the young woman on the phone, I heard Robin say, not directly into the phone. Hello, April? A strange man's voice said. Yes? How are you feeling? Okay. The smoke is... I coughed for the first time, and then I really started to panic. Can you see where the smoke is coming from? I took a look around the room, and for the first time it was thick enough that I could see it was coming from under the door. I told the cop as much. Stuff whatever you can in that crack. Your pants, shirt, whatever. The smoke is your enemy right now. So I took off my hoodie and stuffed it in there. It made a pretty good seal. When I was back on the phone, he said, If you have anything else to wrap around your face, that might also help with the smoke. So I took off my shirt and wore it like a bandit mask. I couldn't tell if it was helping, but at least I was half naked now. April, listen to me. We're going to get you out of there. You're high in the building, which means the smoke will be thicker where you are than lower in the building. Can you get lower in the building? I'm locked in a room. The door is metal and I can't break it down, but there's a window. It's like 20 feet off the concrete, though. April, go over to the door for me. Feel it with the back of your hand. I did. I pulled my hand back sharply from the door. It wasn't searing, but the feeling of any warmth coming from it terrified me. It's pretty hot, I said, trying to keep my shit together. Okay, April, we are working on getting into the building, but the entrances are all blocked or burning. We are working on making new entrances. How is the smoke in there? It is not good. April, when you break the window, a lot of smoke is probably going to come in through it, which means that once you do that, you will have to jump out of it pretty quickly. When you do that, you will want to lower yourself by your hands over the edge and then drop. Land on your feet, but don't lock your knees. I'll talk to you once you're down there. When I break the window, I said. Not a question, just a confirmation. Yes. He did not try to convince me. He did not tell me that I needed to do it. He talked about it as if it was as natural a thing as taking my next breath. Do you have something to break it with? I looked at the metal drawer I had removed from the desk still lying on the floor by the door. There was the pot, too. It was a weird choice, metal drawer or clay pot. Which tool will I use to smash the window through which I will then hurl my body without regard for whether I can survive the fall? But, like, I wouldn't actually have to do that, my mind told me. Carl would save me. He had saved me before, 2 times. Where was he now? Where was Hollywood Carl's hand? Why had he let me come in here? A feeling of frustration welled up in me so intense that I almost screamed. April, are you okay? I coughed. Yeah. Can you break the window? Yeah. Okay, just stay on the line, and when the smoke gets too thick, you'll need to break that window. How do I know when that is? He paused for a second, then said, You'll know. I looked out the window. It was so thick with smoke that I couldn't make out the far wall. There was, however, an occasional flicker of orange light. I grabbed the live stream phone. I can't believe I was still streaming. The audience had now ballooned to well over 10 million viewers, my largest stream to date. Turns out broadcasting your own ongoing attempted murder is a great way to get views. Also, probably doesn't hurt to do it in just your bra and skinny jeans.
I guess, unsurprisingly, I wasn't concerned with modesty at the moment. I coughed a few times, but not uncontrollably, and said, mostly to distract myself, "Hey everybody, how's the David Bowie lyric thing going?" The little iPod was still playing. Comments flew by too fast to see. I scrolled up to pause them. The people who weren't being blandly sympathetic, or accusing me of faking this whole thing, assured me that the conversation had moved over to the Psalm, which was, of course, built for just this sort of thing. Some people had already tried touching Carl with gold, white gold, yellow gold, 24-karat gold. Nothing had happened. I just sat there, reading comments as the smoke built up. My eyes started to water, and my lungs started to burn. Occasionally, I would answer a question or make a remark. "I'm too much of an attention whore to fake my own death," or, "That's really nice of you to say, Parker," that kind of thing. Eventually, I moved behind the desk because I could feel the heat coming off the wall. The smoke out the window was a consistent orange, and I could barely go two breaths without gasping. I picked up my personal phone. "Hey, policeman!" I hacked a half dozen uncontrolled coughs. "Hey, April, the fire department is here now, but we still need to give them as much time to work as we can. When you break the window, the smoke will come in fast, so you'll need to move quickly." He said all this without pausing. "Okay," I replied in a croak. "Okay, I need you to do that now. The smoke is your biggest enemy." "Okay, I'm going to jump out of a window now," I said, suddenly aware that those might be my last words. "Okay," the man replied. So I stuffed both phones in my jeans pocket. I grabbed the desk drawer and slammed it into the window. Smoke started pouring into the room. My next breath was excruciating. It didn't feel like it contained anything except tiny needles, and the coughing fit that ensued made me involuntarily gasp in more smoke. I coughed more. I realized I wasn't getting any real air. I thought I would have time to clean off the glass, but I didn't. I took my shirt off my face and placed it over the glass nubs sticking up from the window frame. Some protection, at least. I plopped my right ass cheek onto the shirt and nonetheless felt the glass biting through the shirt, my jeans, and my skin. But I was retching now. I rushed to get my body positioned to lower myself from my hands to save those precious 5 feet between me and the ground. But then, I just fell. Ungainly, and listing to one side, I fell into open air. I felt the sudden heat of the fire. The little room had been protecting me, but in those milliseconds before I slammed into the ground, I could see the smoke begin to clear. I hit. Left foot first, then left arm, then my head slammed against the concrete. Somehow, this wasn't enough to knock me unconscious. I continued to cough, my lungs still filled with the evil particles of smoke. But now when I gasped, it didn't get worse. My brain could tell that I wasn't suffocating anymore, and so it moved to the more pressing issue of the screaming pain coming from my arm and leg. The smoke was so clear down here that I could see the fire. It was licking every vertical surface in eyeshot. Several sensations screamed simultaneously through the fog of my concussion, but my leg was the loudest. I raised myself on my good right arm, getting myself into a rough sitting position. I looked down. The lower part, above the ankle, was very broken. Blood was already starting to soak through my pants. "This is goddamn bullshit!" I shouted. I realized that everyone, seeing only the darkness of my pocket on the live stream, heard me say those words. Even now, I was still thinking about the audience. I reached into my pants pocket, pulling out both phones. "Okay, I'm okay. I mean, not okay, I'm badly injured, but I'm not dead yet. Let's hold on to the fact that I'm not dead yet." I could feel the heat beating on me from every direction, but more from the top and the right than from the left. So I started to move myself in that direction. There was a loud and persistent roaring filling the warehouse. And then I had the dumbest thought that I'd ever had in my life. "Everywhere around the world! Guys, not just one Carl at a time. Every Carl, at the same time!" Very me of me to assume that no one else had figured this out yet, but I had something no one else had. An audience. Bigger than the Super Bowl. Bigger than Neil freaking Armstrong. The stream view count read more than 700 million viewers. What can't you do with an audience that big? Well, sometimes. Nothing. I could hear the policeman shouting my name from my other phone.
I picked it up and coughed a half dozen times before saying, I broke my leg, but the air is much better down here. Can you move?
Not easily,
I half yelled over the noise of the fire.
Just move toward the back wall. There is less fire there.
My new favorite kind of fire, I said, and the cop actually laughed. At that moment, a call came in from Miranda. Okay, that had to be important.
I'm getting another call. Be right back,
I said to the emergency response professional who was trying to save my life.
Things are not good here, I said. I know, April. I'm watching. Maya is here.
I know what we need to do. We need every Carl to be touched with gold simultaneously, like with the iodine, but every Carl at the same time. In fact, I don't know why I'm telling you. I should be telling them. I picked up the livestream phone.
Hello? I don't know if this will help me. Maybe it will, or maybe it's just the best chance we have of getting this last step done, but if you are near a Carl, or know someone who is, could you touch that Carl with a piece of gold? Just some jewelry will do, we think. I'd really like to know how this ends before... Well, you know.
I picked up the phone Maya was on again and said,
Okay, well, that's something at least.
You're actually one step ahead of us for once, Maya said. I laughed, then coughed.
Miranda decoded the actual code with your passkey. It's just the atomic symbol for gold 64 times.
Well, Carl clearly wanted to get his point across, I guess.
April, there are a lot of places where the Carls aren't publicly accessible. There are 15 Carls in China, and they've been under military guard for months. You can't just walk up to one and put a piece of gold on it.
I didn't know how to respond to that. Carl had sent us our instructions, but we were too damned stupid to allow ourselves to comply. Maybe in a few years, after treaties were signed, everyone would get on board and try it out. But probably not. Probably the Carls would just sit there forever, waiting for the Earth to get its shit together enough to do this one stupid, simple little thing. I turned back to the live stream, moving in close to the mic so they could hear me over the roar of the fire.
Hello again. Look, I'm not going to say this is hopeless, but there are 64 Carls in the world and a good 20% of them are under military guard. If the goal is to touch all of them with gold simultaneously, I honestly think we are being tested. The Carls want us to work together. They want us to be human together, to take a risk together, to make a choice together. I took a break to cough. I'm stuck in a burning building, but more than that, I'm stuck on this planet with you, and honestly, I'm glad. I've been exposed to a lot of awful people in the last few months, but I've met so many more that are amazing, thoughtful, generous, and kind. I honestly believe that is the human condition. And if the Carls are testing us, this final test is the hardest to accomplish. If you pay attention, there is only one story that makes sense, and that is one in which humanity works together more and more since we took over this planet. Yeah, we fuck it up all the time. Yeah, there have been some massive steps backward, but look at us. We are one species now more than we have ever been. People fight against that, and they probably always will. But could there be any time in history when what Carl is asking us would be more possible? Asking dozens of governments to take the same action simultaneously with an uncertain outcome? Or at least asking them to allow their citizens to take that action? More coughing. I don't know. I think maybe if we can't do it right now with 800 million people watching, we won't ever be able to do it. So let's try to do something together. Thank you. Thank you for doing this together. And then I did something no sane creator would ever do. At the peak of my audience, I ended the stream. Then I picked up Miranda's call again, yelling, I think that will help. Maya said something into the phone then, but I couldn't hear over the noise the fire was making. It was starting to feel hard to breathe. I was gasping even though the smoke wasn't so bad. The heat, I thought, or maybe shock. In fact, though I didn't know it then, the fire was consuming all the oxygen in the building. It was so hot. So blazing hot. But there was no escape. It felt like it was coming equally from every direction simultaneously, and since trying to move with a compound fracture was no fun, I just sat still. Is Andy there?
I shouted, suddenly wanting to talk to him.
No, he's currently holding one of my earrings against New York Carl,
Miranda said.
You guys, I'm sorry. I'm going to leave it at that. and then I hung up to call Andy.
Are you okay?
He answered.
No? Is anything happening yet?
No, April.